Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to The Analyst Inside Cricket. I'm Simon Hughes and I'm back from the Caribbean where, of course, England hammered the West Indies 3-0. Actually, the weather's not too bad here today, so I'm not missing the Caribbean too much. And England's fielding coach on that trip, Paul Collingwood, tells us what type of cricketer makes the best fielder. Quite interesting.
I'm looking forward to that. I'm Simon Mann. While you were in the West Indies, Simon, I saw, I think, the best test match I've seen this winter. It certainly got lively in Bengaluru and threw up plenty of talking points, that second test match between India and Australia. Can't wait for the third game. Anyway, we'll discuss those issues in a short while.
And if you have any comments to make about this podcast, please leave a review on iTunes. It all helps us to make it better. Also, subscribe to The Analyst Inside Cricket so you'll get the programme automatically each week. Just click on the button where it says subscribe.
Right, Simon. England 3, West Indies 0. I think before you went out to the Caribbean, we thought that might happen. Actually, that last game just summed it all up. West Indies absolutely hammered. How much did England learn from that trip?
Well, they learned that certainly the West Indies B stroke C side is pretty useless. They learned that there are not too many quick bowlers around in the Caribbean, and actually the pitch is also pretty slow. They also learned that perhaps the weather in the Caribbean isn't quite as hot and boiling and beautiful.
Oh, I'm very sad to hear that.
There's a lot of wind around, actually. It's great weather for sailors, certainly. I think that they probably didn't learn a huge amount about themselves, to be honest. It's all good practice. It's all good experience. But the West Indies were so poor that nothing was really exposed in England's deficiencies. I think one or two players did well. I thought Liam Plunkett came through well. He's a guy that isn't someone who you sort of immediately think of as a great one-day bowler, but he's emerging. He's strong character and seems willing to bowl in any situation. It was nice to see Chris Wokes getting the Man of the Series award, the unassuming Chris Wokes, deservedly winning that Man of the
Series.
Goodness
me, he has improved in the last years. Well, I think when he was picked for that Centurion Test match in South Africa just over a year ago, the number of negative comments that I saw on social media about him, but you wouldn't get a single negative comment about him now. He's really progressed in the last year or so.
Yes, and I think it's partly confidence. And obviously that comes with just being constantly picked, being constantly given the responsibility of opening the bowling. And you know, he comes in at number 8 and he could easily bat at number 6. In fact, he put some of the other batting to shame in the second game. Scored 68 out of 102 partnership with Root, totally won the game, looked incredibly confident and authoritative throughout his innings. Just keeps it simple, uncomplicated, but very effective. Mr. Reliable, I think he's becoming, and his bowling is so consistent. You know where he's going to bowl every time. You might say in a one-day match, well, if you know where a guy's going to bowl, that means you can attack him. But he's got enough variety and enough understanding of batsmen to be very effective, and I think he'll be a great asset to England in the Champions Trophy because the pitches will have a little bit of help.
Sam Billings is an interesting character, isn't he? He had an opportunity, played the first two games, got runs in that first match, and he, as he walked off, he made just over 50, didn't he? As he walked off, he probably thought, oh, I missed a chance here. Got out for naught the next game, and of course, wouldn't you know it, back comes Alex Hales, third game, scores 100. I wonder whether Billings, you know, on the plane home, just kicking himself a bit.
Well, I know he did. After that first game, I said to him, well played, good intelligent batting, and he said, I should have got 100. Mm. And in a funny sort of way, he's got the same slight issue that Mark Ramprakash had when he was first an England player. And I don't mean, it's not a mental thing. He's so talented, he's got so many shots. Mm. And Ramprakash was the same. So many different shots for the same ball. And sometimes that can be a disadvantage because you think, well, I've played that shot a few times, I'll try this one now. And I thought that innings he played, the 50 in the first game, it was a little bit of trouble with the new ball, but then after that he looked very good. And what he did well was he swept on a slow pitch. The sweep is better than trying to clip the ball down the ground, because if you try to hit the ball down the ground and it stops a bit, you hit a catch. Sweeping, you wait for the ball and hit down on it, and you're hitting across the line of the ball, you've got probably more control. So he did some excellent sweeps and reverse sweeps. And then when he got to 50, he thought, well, I'll go and try the down the ground shot now instead of the sweep, and got out, caught mid-wicket. And so sometimes having too many options as a batsman is worse than having too few, where someone like Root just keeps it incredibly simple. He's got three shots. He's got the little dab through the offside, the off drive, and the clip through the leg side, and occasionally a slog sweep, and that's kind of pretty much it. And it's incredibly effective.
It just shows, doesn't it, how ruthless international sport is, how ruthless top-level sport is. Because he probably, when he got to 50, he thought, oh, this is great. I'm in here. I can really enjoy this. And then a week later, he's thinking, oh, really missed my chance. Of course, his chance will come again, but it won't perhaps come as quickly as he would have hoped.
I think, ultimately, he's a better player. Billings is a better player than Alex Hales.
But they're not going to get rid of Alex Hales,
obviously not. And Hales is very good at sort of collaring mediocre bowling. I think against top bowling, he might be exposed, and he has been in Test cricket. But against sort of ordinary-ish bowling, medium pace, smallish boundaries, average spin, he's absolutely brutal. And it's brilliant. It pretty crude, some of those shots in that 100 in the last match. Top edge six to get to his 100, and skyers that fell between three players. But blimey, when he hits the ball, it went over the Garfield Sobers dressing rooms, out of the ground a couple of times. And you have to hand it to him. Well, no pun intended. He's come back from a hand injury, smacked 100. Brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, you can't argue with that. I mean, Billings will get his chance in the future, but it just shows that when you get that opportunity, you really have to take it and sort of nail it down, really hammer it down. I mean, that's England. What about the West Indies?
Well, they were woeful, really. And I suppose, you have to be slightly sympathetic. They've lost so many players. They only had Carlos Brathwaite from the original World T20 side playing in this current series. They've all gone off to their other tournaments and so on. But it was disappointing to see the level of both ability and actually fitness. And in fact, I met the chairman of the West Indies selectors, Courtney Brown, former West Indies player, at a function. And he came up to me and he said, look, I'd love to know, you've been watching these games. What do you think of us? What can we do to improve? And I said, well, look, I think three things. Firstly, you've got to identify the players that you think are going to take them forward rather than just chopping and changing, which is always a temptation when you're rebuilding a team, is to keep, bringing in people and throwing out people. Try and sort of get a core together, as I think England have since the World Cup, and really identify who those players are and work with them. Secondly, I think they need to be smarter. And I said, I think you should use New Zealand as a kind of role model, because they've made the most of limited resources in the past. They continue to do it. Look at their performance. I know it's a while back now, 1992 World Cup, where they brought out new things like a spinner opening the bowling and a pinch hitter, things like that. They were just creative, and that got them to within a whisker of the final in that tournament with really limited resources. West Indies have got limited resources. They've got no money. They've got a fragmented organisation. players, you know, disappearing off all over the place. So it's hard for them. But the third thing they need, and this is one thing that I think they really can work on, is fitness. And they just looked unfit as players. I mean, one guy in a one-day international suffered cramp when he got to about 50. Jason Mohamed, good player, went suffered cramp. I mean, that isn't good. And you're right, if it's 140 degrees somewhere and he's batted the whole day and he's totally dehydrated, maybe. But it was 25, a breezy day. He ran a few twos and he'd suffer from cramp. And if you look at the bowlers, I mean, these big strapping guys, Jason Holder, Carlos Brathwaite, they're huge, incredible hulks bowling at 80 miles an hour. And you just look at them. Yeah, they're big guys. They're not strong and they're not particularly fit. And to his credit, Courtney Brown said, yeah, I agree. So they're not fit enough. England, you look at the England team, you know, Liam Plunkett, Johnny Bairstow, Billings, Butler, Stokes. I mean, they are Olympic athletes in their physique. Absolutely fantastic. And it showed up when you look at the West Indies.
It reminded me, that third game in Barbados, it reminded me of watching, say, an old Benson Hedges Cup match where the county side was playing against the minor county side. It was that straightforward, wasn't it, for England?
Yeah, and it really came out in the fielding. Elementary catches were dropped by the West Indies. A couple of absolute sitters. One fielder, Craig Brathwaite, in the second game, I think, caught a ball on the boundary, about waist high, and just wandered over the ropes. So it was six. That generally their fielding was average. And that's an area that you really can work on. It doesn't necessarily need high skills, you know, elite players. You just have to have the right basics and do some really good work. They haven't even got a fielding coach.
And you spend more time fielding than you do anything else in cricket.
Which is, of course, Ian Chappell's famous line, that, you know, you might as well enjoy fielding because you're going to do a lot of it. And, you know, with that in mind, I thought, you know, England's fielding is something that, an area that Owen Morgan said he wanted improvement. And it's getting there. I think there's still, you know, little areas of improvement. But generally speaking, they are pretty good. It was really interesting talking to Paul Collingwood, the current fielding coach, about what makes a really good fielder. And by the way, I did interview him on the side of the pitch during the game, so there's quite a lot of crowd noise.
When you see the best fielders in the world, you see the time that it takes from getting the ball in the hand to release is very, very quick. So trying to install a little bit of technique involved in that, but also just getting the awareness, really, of them being able to do that within the inner ring.
And when you say the best fielders in the world, you're talking people like AB de Villiers, are you? I mean, who are your kind of models?
Well, AB de Villiers is somebody, when you watch him on a field, he's almost like a cat, how he moves around. I mean, the anticipation is one thing. I mean, he seems to be 5 yards ahead of the game before the ball's even hit the bat.
So if you could pick on one area of the fielding, not as opposed to an individual, that you really want to try and improve, what's your focus on?
I would say a lot of the best fielders are really good athletes. So it's actually, a lot of it is before you get to the fielding stage. And certainly the one-day side in the T20 side, you're seeing athletes in the field a lot better than what we were in our day. And that's a key thing, because you've got to be able to move around fast. You've got to be able to dive, get in the power positions, all that kind of stuff. You know, fielding to me is all about your leg strength and glute strength. So you can get your body into low positions, but at good paces. You see, a lot of the best fielders in the world are actually wicketkeepers. The ones that take their gloves off. And because they've got great leg strength and they'll be able to move with a good posture through the ball.
In fact, you've got several examples in this team. You've got, obviously, Billings, you've got Butler, and you've got Bairstow.
Yeah, and I mean, Keyswell, he used to be one of the best fielders back in his day as well. So it's an amazing thing that he... And I always try to figure out why they're so good. I think also they've got strong hands. I think strong hands is obviously a crucial thing in fielding. You've got to have, not hard hands, but when the ball comes at fast paces, have strong hands so the ball isn't going to power through your fingers. And you know, obviously wicketkeepers have caught so many balls throughout their career that they've got really, really good hands.
I suppose one slight downer is you're starting the season minus 48 points. How are you going to kind of rev the troops up with that?
Well, I think we've only got two four-day games up until July, so we're going to be minus points going into July, so that could be quite tough to motivate the guys going into midway through the season. But on a serious note, the guys are really, you know, I've seen an amazing response since obviously being relegated and the points deduction, all that kind of stuff. I think there's a real togetherness. Sometimes things like this can bring you even closer together, and the boys are desperate to get back to where we belong. And you know, to be the only county that hasn't been relegated since the two divisions came in, that was a real pride to us. It was a real proud thing to have that in the locker. But so it is frustrating, but you know, we've got to get on with it. We're still playing first-class cricket, and we're still producing good cricketers up there, and we want to continue doing that.
It doesn't count as relegation, mate, really. It's not the same, is it?
Believe me, it counts as relegation. We're in the second division and we don't want to be there. We want to be at the top of the first.
I've just totted up, actually, the number of cricketers each county has produced for England in the last 20 years. Yorkshire are first and Durham are second. With, yeah. I think, 9 in 20 years. Of course, you were one of them.
Again, we're very proud of that because we feel as though we've got a system up there that works. We create a good environment up there, obviously a great work ethic, but a really relaxed environment as well, where guys are allowed to express themselves and take a responsibility, a major part of the team, even at a young age. And you know, we feel as though it's a club that does produce good cricketers because of that reason. We've got a good academy there as well. We've plucked some good players out of league cricket up there. It's very strong. And yeah, hopefully we take them to the next level, which is what every county should be doing. You know, we want to produce England cricketers.
Well, that's England's fielding coach Paul Collingwood talking to Simon, also still playing with Durham. He's not quite right about Durham's fixtures. They do have early county championship matches in April. They have about a month off before they play a game against Sussex on the 21st of May. But they are going to be behind for quite a long while.
Well, you can't expect county captains to know all their fixtures off by heart.
No, that's fair enough. Well, what else did you notice about England's fielding in the West Indies, Simon?
I think that Collingwood is quite old school, and he sort of admits it, that he just does old-fashioned drills and bits of chat. Obviously, they watch a few videos of elite fielders, but I think that the reason that England are particularly good and are improving as well is that I think they motivate each other. An example of that was watching Stokes and Billings practice the sort of relay catching, the assists on the boundary, before the last game. You know, I was stood there for 10 minutes. I just wanted to have a chat to Sam Billings, and I had to wait ages while they did these catches that were deliberately hit as if they were going over the rope, and one fielder jumps up in the air and flicks it back to the other one. They were doing that for over 20 minutes, and each time the fielding hitter, this is Otis Gibson, the bowling coach, each time he went, right, that's enough, lads, isn't it? They went, no, we want to do more. And they were really enjoying the spectacle, actually, beside a quite big section of English fans doing these kind of acrobatic demonstrations. One guy, as I say, sort of jumping up or diving over the rope and flicking it back to the other one. They were quite hard catches as well, you know, skewing through the wind and up into a blue sky, really hard to judge. There was hardly one drop in 20 minutes. And the throwing, you know, I mean, Stokes, the throwing.
Amazing arm.
He throws it flat from right out on the boundary, absolutely spot into the fielder's mitt, the fielding coach's mitt. I mean, fantastic athletes. It's awesome to watch.
Something I noticed is the improvement in Adil Rashid's fielding stroke catching as well. He took a brilliant catch in the T20 match in Kanpur when we're in India, and he also took a couple of decent catches in West Indies.
Well,
he's
done a lot of work on it, and it just shows what you can achieve, actually. Mm. He's not a natural mover or anything, but he actually took a couple of good skiers as well, the ball circling in the wind and him sort of pirouetting underneath it, but he took them. So, yeah, I mean, England are almost right on the fielding line now. They've pretty much got no weak links. But I'd say Rashid is probably the least good, but even he is pretty good.
Well, that's England against West Indies. It's probably time to draw the curtains on that. I mean, it wasn't the greatest one-day series ever played. Some fantastic cricket, mind you, being played out in India, that compelling series between India and Australia, and that's next on our agenda.
So while I've been frolicking about in the Caribbean, you've been loitering on your sofa watching India v Australia.
Well, it was compelling stuff. It really was. It was a brilliant second test match. Sort of feverish, febrile atmosphere. India desperate to get back in the series after their defeat in Pune in the first game. Of course, it all boiled over towards the end of the game with, you know, accusations that Steve Smith was looking to the dressing room on his DRS, you know, looking for a bit of help from the dressing room. It's an interesting one, that, isn't it, about whether you should be allowed to have some help from the dressing room, because ultimately it's about getting the right decision, isn't it? And it, you know, what's wrong with having the right decision made? But it's not allowed. The ICC have reiterated that it's not allowed that a batsman in the middle can look to the dressing room, because there is one factor, and we're always aware of it actually when we're out in places like India, is that sometimes we get what's called a feed in our radio box or television box, which means you actually see the action on your television monitor as it's happening out in the middle, so it's contemporaneous. On other occasions, you might have a TV in your box as well, which has a delay because it's got to go up on the satellite and then come down again. So you might have a delay of 8 or 10 seconds. So presumably in the dressing room, they might have one or either. So if you're watching on television, getting the television pictures, the appeal has happened out there. You can have a look on your television monitor, and you basically get another look. You're warned by what's happening out in the middle. So those sitting in the dressing room, the coaches, can have a look, assess it and go out, not out, whatever. And you could have a signal, some sort of clandestine signal, I don't know, you scratch the top of your head or something, to communicate, review it or not review it. You know, have some sort of secret set of signals. I mean, Darren Lehman said they didn't have that. But, it's possible that, you know, there is that avenue open for some type of chicanery. And Virat Kohli saying, well, you know, when I was batting, they definitely was communication. There were two occasions when there was communication between the dressing room and those players in the middle. And that, you know, caused a huge stink afterwards as well. There's accusations of cheating that Kohli had sort of seemed to level against the Australians. And the Australians said, no, it only happened once, and it was just a brain fade by Steve Smith. Actually, Peter Hanscom, who he's batting with, he was the one that sort of took the rap for it. He said, you know, have a look at the changing room, see what they're saying. I mean, where do you stand on all this?
Well, I think it's fine, actually. I think if you have a bit of help from the dressing room, I think it's completely okay. Obviously, the key thing,
in theory, because it's obviously not okay according to the ICC's regulations at the moment.
Well, I think they need to be changed. The key thing is the 15-second rule. You can't deliberate forever. You have to keep to that 15-second rule. Obviously, the dressing room is slightly influenced by, as you say, the timing of the pictures. And in a poorer country, like the West Indies, you will probably only have the TV coverage, so there'll be a delay, 7-8 second delay. In a richer country like India, you probably will have a direct feed of what the third umpire is seeing. Yeah. So they will have a little bit more time. Isn't it like that Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? You know, ask a friend, phone a friend, ask the family, whatever. I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I in a way, it sometimes can confuse it, because it's like too many cooks spoil the broth, isn't it? The more involvement you have of people off the field, the more time it takes to process the information, and you might run out of time. So I think it swings and roundabouts. I think if you want a bit of help from the dressing room, it's fine. And as you say, in the end, you want to get the decision right.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? Yeah, that DRS is sort of to get the decision right. I suppose it's, the way it's construed at the moment is it's about the players in the middle knowing whether the decision is right, whether they sense it's a howler or not. I mean, there was another incident in that game where Marsh was given out, the left-hander was given out LBW for no shot. And Steve Smith was batting, and it wasn't reviewed, and it was missing off stump. It was an error by umpire Nigel Long, according to the Hawkeye. It's very hard for the non-striker to make that judgment. Sometimes you can stand a bit closer to the stumps.
Well, I was going to say I rather liked what Joe Root did in the India series.
Yeah. We get really close to the umpire.
He was annoying the bowler, obviously. Yeah. Ashwin, wasn't he? But I think they're absolutely right. You know, try and get as close to the line of the stumps as you can as a non-striker and help your partner.
Yeah, Smith was quite wide. It was noticeable he was quite wide on that shout. So it's very hard. And it was one of those that probably when you see it in real time, you think, oh, that's close. And when you don't play a shot as well, you feel the umpire's more inclined to give it out. I mean, whether those people watching in the dressing room on television would have had an instant feel of, oh, that's definitely not out. I don't know. It was an interesting one. It was shown to be clearly missing off stump, but it was one of those in sort of old school, in old money, the umpire's just gone, oh, that's out, and everyone would have accepted it. Of course, when with DRS and you've got the predictive Hawkeye going on and showing to miss the stumps, everyone goes, oh, that's a huge error, and focuses on it.
What about the skills on show generally? Were you impressed by India? Did you think Australia looked a bit flattered by their first test victory?
Well, they started the game really well. I thought Rahane's partnership with Pujara was brilliant. The technical skill involved in hauling India back into the game, that century partnership, was amazing to behold, because, you know, Australia did hold sway. You know, Lyon had bowled them out in the first innings of that game. You know, the spinners had done really well in Pune as well. India were under intense pressure. If they faltered there in that second innings, they were under pressure when those two came together. If they faltered then they probably would have lost the game. So it was a sort of tremendous willpower, but also the technical skill, the technical ability that Indian players have batting on their pitches, even when the ball's turning, bouncing,
well,
spitting.
They weren't showing that in the first game, though.
No, they weren't, but they did in this game. The ball wasn't quite doing as much. The pitch wasn't as bad, but I sensed when it was 188 to win, you really felt India were in the game. You know, you think under 200, you've got a decent chance batting last. And we weren't in the fifth day of the game, it was the fourth day of the game. But I just felt, you know, if they could get Warner and Smith out before they got to 100, then Australia were going to be under pressure, because there was enough there for the bowlers, and Australia ultimately folded. But it was a brilliant partnership between Pujara and Rahane. Effectively won the game.
Ashwin seems to have the wood on Warner, which is probably one of the keys to it, really, because Warner's so good at setting up the game.
Well, if he'd got going,
yeah.
You know, if you have an hour of Warner in a situation like that, you might as well pack up and go home. But he wasn't able to get going.
I've got great admiration for Ashwin. I know we've had him on this show, and he's just a sort of, he's an incredibly decent guy. But I just love the thoroughness of his preparation, and he'll be going home after each day's play, and as we reported on one of these earlier shows, recording his own thoughts into a microphone and trying to kind of analyse his own play and what things worked and what things didn't, trying to find new little subtlety. I think Australia got problems, and the momentum has shifted, hasn't it? As it did in that England tour. England did well in the first test and then didn't really capitalise, and after that it was one-way traffic.
Pat Cummings has been called in. He's been one of those bowlers that, he's been around for a while. He's bowling 90 miles an hour as a 17-year-old, which I always thought at the time, that's going to put an amazing amount of strain on your body. If they get him fit and keep him fit, he is a real threat, though.
Has there been more fuss about someone in history who's only played one test match? I think he was man of the match, wasn't he, in that test match, hit the winning runs, took lots of wickets, but hasn't played another test match since. Saw him bowling in the Big Bash, and he looks really good. He comes charging into bowl. He's got a fantastic action. He's got real pace. He's got variations, which the batsmen have difficulty picking up. He's a great athlete. But all those injuries do take their toll. And I hope, actually, from a sort of detached point of view, that he does come through and become one of Australia's regular players, because it'll make the Ashes incredibly exciting.
Well, it will if he's there, yeah. I mean, it's about fitness, isn't it? I mean, they've got a lot of their quick bowlers over the last few years. They haven't been able to keep them fit. Cummings is still only 23. He's been around for a while.
It's the explosiveness of quick bowling. We've probably said this before, but you put six times your body weight through your knee and ankle every ball you bowl, which is why my knees sound like Rice Krispies. And in fact, I worked out that I've put through my knee in a career of, you know, 15 years, something like 22,000 tonnes, which is the same as one of those ferries that goes across the channel to Brittany. That's the weight of it. That's what I put through my knee. So he's 23, well, he's going to have bad knees in a few years. Hopefully he can take wickets in the meantime while they're still good.
What were you bowling at 17 then, in terms of MPH?
I think more than 19, I was bowling 85.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I think I just gradually got slower after that.
17
I peaked at 19.
17 is young to be bowling at 90 miles an hour, isn't it?
It is, because your body hasn't really developed, absolutely. There's better treatments these days, and obviously they're much fitter, and the training is much more systematic, and the footwear is much better, and the aftercare is brilliant. You know, what did we have? I used to bowl in odd boots, you know, because I'd run up to bowl, and as I ran in, I dragged my back leg, my back foot. So I used to scuff the toe of my back foot, but the front foot was fine. So boots would wear out quite quickly. The toe of one boot would wear out quite quickly. I couldn't afford to buy new boots. I didn't get supplied any. So I used to borrow the spare boot of another batsman. So I'd have an Adidas on my left and a Mitre on my right or something to last me through the season. I mean, and they had no protection in the soles. You virtually feel the studs coming straight through into your feet. It was awful.
Yozza bowls in odd boots. Well, that doesn't surprise me. Anyway, let's finish with our highlight, low light. I'm going to do the highlight this week. Well, the pitch in Bangalore, it might not be to everyone's liking, but it's great to see a test match, a test series played on surface. Perhaps not so much Pune, but the second game. It's great to see test matches played on surfaces which offer something to the bowlers. You talk about all sorts of things about test cricket, day-night test cricket, and pink balls and getting people to come along. If you have pitches where there is something in it for the bowlers, you create an exciting product. And if you create an exciting product, people will want to watch it. If you have too much in favour of the batsman, it gets boring.
Hear, hear. 100% agree with that.
Oh, good.
I can't
You are a bowler, so you were,
I suppose. Of course. I can't really claim to have a low light after being in the Caribbean for 10 days with three matches to cover in that time. So my low light is when I got home, actually. And it's a bizarre one, but arriving back at Gatwick, I was just walking through the terminal and I spotted this big sign up as I went to the toilet saying, "This toilet has been awarded the Loo of the Year." And I just can't believe that they have Loo of the Year awards. I mean, who votes for them? Who wins them? And are you happy when you do win them? Surely that award should be flushed away. Ha ha.
Well, I thought you could talk about cricket. Well, there we go. What a bizarre end to the Analyst Inside Cricket this week. I hope you enjoyed it. We've talked about England West Indies. We talked about Australia against India. Really looking forward to the third test match. I wonder whether India have got the upper hand now, about to drive that home in the third and fourth games of the series. We'll be having a look at that game next week. But it's goodbye for now.
Thanks for listening.
Podcast Network.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.